Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Thursday, February 15th, 2024. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Idaho lawmakers may sue over University of Idaho's plans to purchase University of Phoenix. Idaho Senate kills bill that would have shielded Monsanto from lawsuits caused by Roundup. Washington bill would limit rent increases to 7% per year. And more on the Idaho Republican Party's decision to close presidential caucuses to the press. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman and live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho. I'm Lee Robartis and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Idaho lawmakers are threatening to sue over the University of Idaho's planned purchase of the University of Phoenix. The Idaho House State Affairs Committee voted today to introduce a bipartisan resolution urging the State Board of Education to reconsider its May 18th vote to approve a financial plan for the University of Idaho to purchase the 85,000-student online University of Phoenix. The resolution says the Ed Board should reconsider any affiliation between the UI and the University of Phoenix, quote, unless and until the legislature enacts a law authorizing such actions. Republican Representative Brent Crane of Nampa and Democratic Representative John Gannon of Boise co-sponsored the bill, which has been in the works behind the scenes for weeks. According to the Idaho Education News, Representative Crane said, "Process matters to me. We were not dealt into this process at all." Representative Gannon said, "This seems to me like this was a purchase by ambush." The three-page resolution says at the end, lawmakers would assign House Speaker Mike Moyle and Senate President Pro Tem Chuck Winder to work on their behalf and have the authority to initiate appropriate legal action. The University of Idaho says the $685 million deal would provide the school with millions of dollars in new revenue each year. However, the proposed deal did not become public until May 17th after three closed-door executive sessions in which the State Board of Education and University of Idaho officials discussed the planned purchase. Attorney General Raul Labrador sued the State Board of Education over closed meetings last year, and a fourth district judge in Boise recently ruled in the Ed Board's favor because of an exception in Idaho's open meetings law covering situations when there are competitors for a purchase from out of state or out of the country. In other news regarding the University of Idaho's planned purchase of the University of Phoenix, the Northwest Commission on Colleges and Universities has issued a statement saying it was unable to make a determination on the impact of the University of Idaho's plan to purchase the online 85,000-student University of Phoenix for $685 million. The accreditation agency has completed its review of the proposed purchase. Northwest Commission on Colleges and Universities President Sunny Ramaswamy wrote in an email to the Idaho Education News, "The commission is unable to make a determination on the impact, financial or otherwise, of the proposed affiliation on the University of Idaho." The University of Idaho has created a nonprofit corporation called 4-3 Education, which would manage the University of Phoenix if the parties finalize the purchase. Ramaswamy wrote in a February 7th letter to University of Idaho President C. Scott Green, "The commission has determined that the proposed affiliation between the Regents of the University of Idaho and 4-3 Education Incorporated does not constitute a change in its governance, legal status, form of control, or institutional mission for the University of Idaho. Because the University of Idaho and 4-3 Education Incorporated are under common ownership control, there are no apparent third-party financial implications associated with the proposed affiliation. Accordingly, the extent of the financial implications of this affiliation for the University of Idaho is unknown." Writing in an email to UI employees yesterday, President Green said, "This decision moves us one step closer to an exciting new chapter for higher education in Idaho and improved access to a better future for its citizens and its industries. There are some things which might still sidetrack the purchase." Attorney General Raul Labrador has said he might appeal a case he lost against the State Board of Education to the Idaho Supreme Court. Labrador's lawsuit said the Ed Board violated the state open meetings law by holding closed-door sessions to discuss the planned purchase. Ada County District Judge Jason Scott ruled against Attorney General Labrador January 30th. The legislature could also try to block the purchase, although President Green says the State Board of Education has full authority to approve the purchase without the legislature's involvement. 4-3 Incorporated must still enter the bond market to finance the purchase of the University of Phoenix before it could move forward. North Idaho College President Nick Swain says the Northwest Commission on Colleges and Universities has given the college more time to address its precarious accreditation situation. In July, the Northwest Commission on Colleges and Universities decided to continue NIC's accreditation for another year, but said the college must continue to make its case that it should remain accredited. The commission has pointed to ongoing problems with governance, finances, and enrollment declines in its assessments of the college during the previous year and a half. President Swain told the legislature's Joint Finance Appropriations Committee this week the extension will continue until at least October, when there will be a full hearing on North Idaho College's accreditation situation. Swain told lawmakers the college's downward enrollment trend may be turning around. He said NIC's spring semester enrollment is up 13% from the previous year. The community college in Coeur d'Alene now has 3,800 full-time degree-seeking students. The Idaho Senate killed a bill from Senator Mark Harris of Soda Springs today that would have shielded pesticide manufacturers from citizen lawsuits by those harmed by nearby spraying. The economy of Soda Springs, where Harris is from, is greatly influenced by the ag giant Monsanto, which was purchased by the international pharmaceutical firm Bayer a few years ago. Most of the phosphate that Monsanto uses to make its most common pesticide glyphosate, known by its brand name Roundup, and other fertilizers, is mined near Soda Springs. The vote against the bill was 19-15. Presenting the bill, Senator Harris:
"The purpose of this legislation is to protect agriculture pesticide products farmers and ranchers depend on from unreasonable warning label requirements by adding language to Idaho's Pesticide and Chemigation Act and Idaho Consumer Protection Act. The legislation clarifies that a pesticide label approved by the United States Environmental Protection Agency and registered and regulated under the Idaho State Department of Agriculture under the Federal Insecticide, Fungicide, and Rodenticide Act, FIRFA, so shall be sufficient to satisfy any requirements for a warning regarding health and safety in the state of Idaho. Senate Bill 1245 applies directly to the health and safety warning labels that are on pesticide products. These labels have been approved through an extensive 8 to 12 year regulatory process that warn of the known potential harms caused by a pesticide product. There's also a review process that takes place every 10 years to update information to see if anything has been missed. And those who do the research to generate the data used for the pesticide labels go through an inspection process by the EPA at least once a year to make sure the information is accurate. They also physically go out and test the research plots to ensure accuracy and inspect for any potential fraudulent information. If a product causes cancer, the federal FIRFA process can require that information to be included on the pesticide label. I think it's important to remember the Idaho State Department of Agriculture also retains the full authority to enforce pesticide labels, to approve or disapprove pesticide labels, and to further restrict or ban pesticide products or their use in the state. All pesticide labels in Idaho expire on December 31st of every year, and require an annual re-registration. So companies that manufacture pesticides must reapply with the ISDA every year in order to get their label reissued for use. Senators, if you're wondering what a label looks like, I do have one here. And if you want, send a page over and I can send them with it so you can see what a label looks like. These crazy lawsuits that we're hearing about around the country are creating uncertainty for farmers and ranchers because we're wondering if American-made products will continue to be available. For example, here in Idaho, we have a company that makes elemental phosphorus. This company employs about 800 Idahoans and creates an economy in Idaho. And this plant in Soda Springs has access to one of the cleanest and purest deposits of phosphate ore in the world. If we cannot produce elemental phosphorus here, the only other place in the world we can get this stuff is from communist China. My point is, if we mess up our ability to produce our stuff that our farmers need here, we'll have to get it from other nations that are not our friends. This puts our food security and our national security at risk. How is this happening? How many times can a company get sued for $2.25 billion and still remain in business? And our farmers can't afford to be caught in a supply chain crunch created by being dependent on other nations for stuff they need to operate.
That was Republican Senator Mark Harris of Soda Springs. A Philadelphia jury last month handed down a $2.25 billion verdict against Monsanto parent company Bayer for 49-year-old non-Hodgkin's lymphoma patient John McKivison, who developed the cancer after using Roundup on his property for 20 years. McKivison's attorneys said in a statement the jury's unanimous verdict was a condemnation of 50 years of misconduct by Monsanto and a declaration that its misconduct was in reckless disregard of human safety and a substantial cause of John McKivison's cancer. $2 billion of the $2.25 billion award was for punitive damages. Forbes Advisor reports as of 2022, Monsanto had settled 100,000 lawsuits over Roundup exposure, paying over $11 billion. After Senator Harris made his presentation on the Senate floor, Democratic Senator James Rookte of Pocatello argued against the bill.
Bayer says that they've lost about 50% of these cases and won about 50%. In fact, they acknowledge they've lost a little more than they won. And I assume those are just the cases that went to trial. We're not talking about the cases that have been settled under confidential settlement agreements. Now, we have heard that in those cases where they've lost in court, that they've got some rulings that the judge ruled on evidence in a way that they didn't want. And I get that. Judges make dozens of rulings in cases. When I try cases, I get rulings I don't like. I get some rulings I do like. So I understand what they're saying. Some go your way, some don't. Frankly, I don't know what to make of the cases. I learned a long time ago when another attorney tells you about their case, you're not hearing everything. And jurors struggle with everything. They get expert opinions, both scientific and medical. They hear facts. They get to see documents. I don't know what to make of it because I wasn't there. I do know one other thing. I know about an individual who has filed one of these claims. He's from Pocatello. He's one of Pocatello's favorite sons. I've provided you with a letter, unsolicited, that he sent me that I received this morning. That letter is from Merrill Hodge. Some of you may recognize his name. He grew up in Pocatello. He played football for Highland High School, then went on and played running back for Idaho State University, then went on to play for the Pittsburgh Steelers. He's also been an ESPN analyst. That's where many people in Idaho probably have seen him. And he did that until about 2017. But in 2019, he was one of over 18,000 people to file a claim due to Roundup. In 2003, he was diagnosed with stage 2 non-Hodgkin lymphoma, and now he's in his late 50s. But as a teenager, he worked in a farm field at the Shiozawa Farms. If you're from southeast Idaho, you may know Shiozawa Farms. He mixed and sprayed Roundup on both crops and on plants. Let me just walk you through how these cases work so you understand what it is we are protecting these corporations from if we pass this bill. To hold a corporation accountable for harms it causes the public with the product it manufactures, we use Idaho's products liability laws. Every state has products liability laws, but they're state law. They're not federal. You have three options. If a product has harmed you, you have three options under products liability law. The first is a design defect. That means with a little extra money, you could have, it was possible to design this product in a safer manner. Think of a table saw. With a little extra money, you can put a guard on it. It doesn't cost much, and it makes the product much safer. If you were in today's world, if you were to make a table saw without a guard, you could be subject to a design defect lawsuit. Then there's the manufacturing defect. You manufactured it according to the design, but it didn't come out right. So, for example, that same guard didn't do the job it was supposed to. You manufactured it improperly, and the guard flips off, and people are injured from it. Those are not what people use to file lawsuits against pesticide producers. They use the duty to warn. That's the third option in these products liability suits. So, what does that mean? If you have a product that is just, it's dangerous by design, it's manufactured properly, but it is dangerous to the public, you have a duty to warn the public about the product and what it can do so the public can make a knowledgeable and informed decision about whether they want to use the product, and if so, how. That's what we have with these pesticide cases. All right, so that's why it's important that people bring it to do so in court. This law would prevent individuals from making their claim in court. Keep in mind, one of the advantages of being able to make this claim in court is the discovery process. If a corporation has found out that their product causes cancer, for example, let's say they find that out, they also know that their workers suffer from cancer at higher rates than the general population, they have evidence that there's something wrong with their product. They can take that information, put it on a shelf, they can go out and they can pay for additional studies from friendlier organizations that will study their product and give them answers they like. Any they don't like, they put on a shelf. If you can't file a lawsuit and go through the discovery process, depositions, requesting documents, you're never going to know that these studies are on a shelf somewhere. Discovery is kind of like a public records request for private companies. If you don't have that ability, you'll never see that evidence. So what are we left with? Well, we're left with a federal agency, the EPA, or some sub-agency. Maybe they'll protect us. But did you know these corporations can go lobby these federal agencies? They can come to them. They don't bring this study over here. They bring the studies that work for them, and they go to the EPA, and they say to the EPA, look, it's safe, and this study says it's safe, and this study says it's safe, so what are you going to put on the label? The EPA doesn't necessarily have the ability or even the guidance, the requirements, to do that sort of detailed work, and they don't have the ability to go find these studies. That's what trial lawyers do. That's what litigation allows.
That was Democratic Senator James Rookde of Pocatello speaking on the Senate floor. Republican District 6 Senator Dan Foreman of Moscow voted against the bill.
KRFP Community Radio is proudly supported by Ponderosa Rentals, providing quality home rentals since 2006.
The Washington House approved a rent stabilization bill Tuesday that would limit rent increases to 7% in a 12-month period. House Bill 2114 would also prohibit landlords from increasing rent during the first year tenants are renting. The vote in the House was 54-43. According to the McClatchy News Service, bill sponsor Democrat Emily Alvarado of Seattle told lawmakers rising rents are crushing Washingtonians financially. Alvarado said rents are going up faster than wages. Seniors see rents going up faster than Social Security. Families are making impossible choices while paying more and more to landlords, and a record number of Washingtonians are spending more than half of their income on rent. Republicans in the legislature opposed the bill. Republican Representative Chris Corey of Yakima said rent stabilization will have an impact opposite of the bill's intent, including more rent increases and a lower number of units available. Some Republicans said the bill would discourage landlords from renting. The bill now heads to the Senate. The racial equity group Palouse Core announced a proposal to the Pullman School Board seeking a voice on the board. Local citizens seeking improvements to integrity formed the Palouse Council on Racial Equity, otherwise known as CORE, in 2020. The group, which grew as the Black Lives Matter movement progressed, has proposed a partnership with the Pullman School Board to create a citizens advisory committee for a method of connecting with members of the public and school leaders. The group says the committee would help school board members maintain a non-discriminatory climate, support diversity, and provide protections to students from discrimination and harassment. According to the Daily News, Palouse Core member Francine Wilson said Pullman schools have diversified and Pullman's demographics have changed. Wilson said a communication gap exists between administrators and the public. She said many people who have seen or experienced discriminatory harassment are reluctant to report it due to a fear of retaliation, self-consciousness, or a lack of compassion. Core member Dina Bayumi said a citizen advisory committee would make recommendations backed by research and help create evidence-based programs and policies. Bayumi said recommendations would take into consideration issues of systemic and structural racism, marginalized citizens, and unspoken biases which impede academic success. Bayumi said groups including the Washington State Board of Education, the State School Directors Association, and the Educational Opportunity Gap Oversight and Accountability Committee would help give suggestions for improved integrity. The committee would evaluate new and effective methods of reporting harassment, intimidation, bullying, and discrimination. Core member William Engels said a proposed citizen association would report twice per year on the community outreach plan. Engels said the publicly available reports would be intended to increase trust. The Pullman School Board did not take any action on the proposal, which came during the public comment period of a school board meeting this week.
Oregon officials are considering providing additional protections to orcas in the region. The Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission will decide on Friday if southern resident orcas should be listed as endangered in the state. Kathleen Callagy is the Northwest representative for Defenders of Wildlife. She says there is a perception that this population was mainly off the coast of Washington and in the Salish Sea.
But a couple of years ago, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration officially expanded their critical habitat because they found that there were some whales who were traveling as far south as Monterey Bay in California.
Southern resident orcas are protected under the Marine Mammal Protection Act and listed as endangered under the U.S. Endangered Species Act and in Washington. However, their numbers have continued to dwindle in recent years, down to about 70. Callagy says added protections from Oregon could help the orcas battle their main threats.
We think that doing this listing will help to trigger interstate and intrastate agency collaboration on addressing their needs as far as salmon abundance, reducing pollutants, and reducing vessel traffic and noise.
Along with an endangered species listing, Callagy hopes the state will also adopt strong guidelines for how to protect these whales. She says it's especially important to increase salmon numbers.
The survival of these two species is interlinked. When we see Chinook populations go down, it's tightly correlated with losses among the southern resident population.
For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
The Idaho Republican Party has announced they will not allow reporters to attend the Republican Presidential Caucus scheduled for Saturday, March 2nd. Republicans will hold their presidential caucus at 210 locations around the state, many of them public buildings. The caucuses will start at 11 a.m. Pacific time, and participants can expect a two-hour process. In order to participate in the presidential caucus, those who are registered as Republicans must have affiliated with the party by December 31st, and they must attend the caucuses in person. There are no provisions for people to participate remotely or by mail if they are sick, disabled, stationed away from home, in the military, or serving on missions. All the Republican caucus sites in Latah County are in public buildings such as schools. Others around the state will be on private property such as in churches. The state Republican Party also plans to close their headquarters in Boise to reporters while they tabulate the results on the afternoon of the caucus, March 2nd, and reporters would only be allowed to enter once party officials are ready to announce the results. The three Republican presidential candidates who have not dropped out are Donald Trump, Nikki Haley, and Ryan Binkley. The ballots will also contain the names of three candidates who have dropped out, Ron DeSantis, Chris Christie, and Vivek Ramaswamy. According to the Idaho Capital Sun, State Republican Party Executive Director Kira Turnbow said, as for the caucus sites, per the Idaho GOP rules of the caucus, only registered Republican voters and their minor children will be admitted into the caucus sites. Turnbow said that would apply to reporters from national news outlets and local reporters as well. Most presidential caucuses have been open to reporters over the years, including the closely watched Iowa caucuses. Closing voting to reporters raises transparency concerns. Alturas Institute President David Adler, who has taught constitution and government classes at public universities in Idaho, wrote to the Idaho Capital Sun the Idaho Republican Party's decision, quote, exalts secrecy over transparency. Alder wrote, Chairman Moon's decision to block press access to the presidential caucus and the official tabulation of votes betrays the presumption of openness that inheres in our democracy and, certainly, in the electoral contests for public office. I don't understand Moon's penchant for secrecy and question the GOP's alleged advocacy for free, fair, and transparent elections. Idahoans for Open Government President Betsy Russell wrote, we all know that transparency builds trust and secrecy generates suspicion. Selecting our leaders is a public matter in this country, not something that should be conducted in secrecy in back rooms. This announcement by the Idaho Republican Party prompts the question, what are they trying to hide? At a time when suspicion of public institutions is running high and conspiracy theories abound, it's mind-boggling that a major party would want to undermine public trust by conducting such an important process in secret. Idaho Press Club President Melissa Davlin wrote in a statement, for years, Republican candidates have raised questions about integrity surrounding candidate nominations and elections. Now, the Idaho Republican Party has chosen to shut out journalists for this high-interest event. The closure of the caucus to reporters also raises a question about bias in reporting. It's unclear how the party will deal with reporters who are also registered Republicans and therefore eligible to participate in the caucus. One possibility is that only journalists reporting from inside the caucus sites would be registered Republicans. So far, it's unknown if party officials would ask them to stop reporting if they are openly doing interviews while participating in the caucus, or if those journalists would be expected to conduct their reporting clandestinely until they leave the caucus site. Moscow police arrested 39-year-old Tyler Anderson yesterday for allegedly breaking into Hodgins Drug and Hobby Pharmacy on Main Street and stealing medications. The Moscow Police Department booked Anderson into the Latah County Jail on a burglary charge and for probation violations. According to the Daily News, Moscow police responded to the drugstore at 5:30 a.m. Wednesday. Responding officers found a smashed window, and it appeared that prescription drugs were stolen or missing. As police were investigating, they noticed Anderson walking near the drugstore and holding a bag, which they said turned out to have medications, including morphine. Officers arrested Anderson and took him to the Latah County Jail, where jailers booked him on the burglary charge. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather forecast for the Moscow Pullman area. There is a chance of snow tonight, mainly before 9 p.m., 30% chance. Areas of freezing fog before 10 p.m., areas of fog after 10 p.m., otherwise cloudy, low 23. Little or no snow accumulation expected. Tomorrow, cloudy through mid-morning, then gradual clearing, high 35. Mostly clear Friday night and Saturday, low 22, high 40. Saturday night, there's an 80% chance of precipitation, a chance of rain and snow between 10 p.m. and midnight, then rain. Snow level, 3,300 feet, low 32. Little or no snow accumulation expected. And a 90% chance of precipitation Sunday, rain before 7 a.m., then rain possibly mixed with snow. Snow level 3,300 feet, high 39, little or no snow accumulation expected. Currently 28 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, and the public affairs shows that you hear every day, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can also send your memberships to KRFP 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho 83843, or go on the KRFP.org website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. There you can adopt a DJ. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business supports community radio. There's also a PayPal option and a Patreon button. And once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. Jim Roach assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. Flashpoints is on next, followed by Appearing Locally, where we feature music from artists that are appearing in the Moscow Pullman area in the near future for a half hour at 8 o'clock, Maximum Rock and Roll. And the Academy's in to play music for you 9 to 11 p.m. with the Not Dark Yet show. And 11 p.m. till 1 a.m. we'll have recorded jam bands concerts with The Ride. So stay tuned for all that. KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Programming on KRFP is brought to you in part by One World Cafe, specializing in craft coffee, fresh baked pastries, artisan sandwiches, weekend brunch, wine, beer, and cider on tap. One World Cafe has a web calendar for upcoming live events and a campus location in the Janssen Engineering Building.
Bad karaoke night.
Throwing those tomatoes.
Come to Bad Karaoke Night at Mikey's.
Pay to sing a song.
pay double to stop a song.
Please don't take them even though you pay out. Oh, rotten cantaloupe. What are you doing to the piano?
Saturday, February 17th. Mikey's Heroes, 7 p.m.
527 South Main Street, downtown Moscow.